And a good rainy Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 4 hours with you. Got a lot to get to. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick.
Good morning.
That's him. Josh Upton and friends behind the glass. He's waving, folks, for everybody out in radio land. He was waving.
Does he have a sport coat on today?
Do we have an interview, Josh?
We got a meeting.
We got a meeting. Because let me tell you, you usually don't wear the sport coat in the radio studio.
It is interesting. When you come into the radio station dressed up.
Something's up.
Like, I was kind of yesterday, and I had a couple people, what do you got? What's going on today? Like, that's the immediate reaction. Like, you don't. Like, why are you dressed like this?
Yeah,
you
know, nobody does this.
You don't come in and do the radio show like that. Why do you have a button down on? Yeah, we had business to do
yesterday. We got a meeting.
We had meetings. I had meetings, plural. So, yeah. So, you have a meeting after the show?
Yep, 2 o'clock. Going straight to the top.
With the other suits?
With the other suits. With the Ryan Porth suit and the Janna suit.
Okay. Well, good luck, Josh. Whatever's going on in your suit meetings, good luck.
Thanks. Might not be here tomorrow.
Well, let's have some fun today then. Could be Josh's last day.
Serious.
With us.
Got me all dressed up to take me out to pasture.
Well, it won't be because he doesn't look sharp.
No. Look, if you're going to go like ZZ Top said, a sharp-dressed man. I would say good luck to Mariano Rivera, but he doesn't need any. And good for the Riders for finally doing the obvious. You know, we've talked about this in all sports. Like, the NFL does. I mean, they all do this. There's always just a little tiny group of people on the committee, whether it's writers, media, you know, the NFL is like, what, about 45, 50 media members that pitch certain players for Canton and the NFL Hall of Fame.
Right.
There's always somebody that says, Tom Brady, no, not the first go around. I'll probably come around, but, you know, I'm not voting yes the first time in. 5 years from now, I'm not voting Tom Brady yes. Like, it's just the stupidest thing ever. Like, right? You always get that. Like, we look at certain players, we're like, what, really? You didn't get 100%? He didn't get 100%.
Right.
Really?
Like, the one that comes to mind for me is
97%.
Cal Ripken.
3% like, said no. Really?
Who didn't vote for Cal Ripken?
But there's always that, right? There's always that little handful that says, no, not the first time. Give me a break. So they did it right.
I guess there are certain players that you think, well, he'll get there eventually, but probably not the first year. And it sort of makes sense. But there are some that it's just like, who would not vote for Nolan Ryan? You know, or you know, some of these guys, the obvious guys.
Well, I'm not sure Nolan Ryan
is in the Mariano Rivera category. Yeah, but there are certain guys that you just know they are Hall of Famers.
Nick Hunter used to try to tell us Nolan Ryan was overrated, and we used to
Yeah, but he's still a Hall of Famer. He is overrated, but he's still a Hall of Famer.
Yes. Yes.
There are certain guys you know. So who didn't vote for them? He's the first guy, Rivera, to get 100%. The first.
First. That's silly.
Like, he's one of the greatest players.
But there have been others that deserve 100%.
He is the greatest closer of all time.
Yes.
But there are other great players. Mm-hmm. How did they have people that were not voting for them?
Because, like I said, usually,
do they take turns saying, okay, you be the guy that doesn't vote for this guy?
Well, I'm trying to think of some examples. Probably what happens is, look, Mariano Rivera was the perfect scenario, right? He met all the criteria. Not only was he great on the field, he was great off the field. He was an unbelievable teammate, unbelievable guy to deal with.
Five dozen other guys in the Hall of Fame.
Give me some other examples of just the great guy everybody loved.
Tom Seaver, Steve Carlton, Jim Palmer. I mean, they were the greatest players of their era. They were Hall of Famers. There was no doubt. So why did they not get 100%?
I just usually think it's because somebody didn't like them.
Okay, maybe.
Or
maybe
somebody was like,
it's a personal,
I'm not going to vote yes the first time.
Just because it was a personal,
sometimes it's
me
per, you know,
for an interview or something?
Well, you know that play. Look, there's a human element.
Yeah, I guess
jerks
so.
Take longer to get in.
Well, I read our esteemed colleague Jason Stark's column on who he voted for, the people that got in The Athletic. It was a really, really good column. To me, the story this year is not who got in, but what is brewing in the coming years. And so, first of all, did you have a beef with anybody that got in? I did not.
How long have we been doing shows together?
A long time.
And how long have I been saying Edgar Martinez? Back to the Nick Stick days.
Right,
Nick the Stick days.
Right.
And you guys laughed.
He does
one thing. He's just a designated hitter.
And so he had to build
he's
a consensus.
He's got one job.
But that's a good example.
And I said he's the best hitter I've ever seen. Tony Gwynn, Edgar Martinez was a pure hitter.
Right. So, but that's a good example of there's a difference between Edgar Martinez and Mariano Rivera. There was debate, but they build consensus, and he gets over the top. He had to wait, but he got there.
But it's think about how silly it is today. I mean, really, honestly, you've had plenty of time to digest this. You guys used to come after me and say he had one thing. All he did, he didn't have
right.
to play in the field. Mariano Rivera had one job: come in and get three outs. That's it. Isn't that the same thing?
Well,
you had one job.
It was. It was a debate among how valuable closers were for
sure.
a long time.
And finally, Lee Smith got in. You're right.
Would argue that a center fielder or a shortstop or a starting pitcher is more valuable than a closer or a DH. But it doesn't mean that you can't be a great player and a Hall of Famer as a closer or a DH. You just have to be the best of the best. And Edgar Martinez was among the best designators of all time.
Great.
He's a hitting machine.
Hitter. Great.
Machine.
I have said it for probably 12 years we've been having this discussion. I've said Edgar Martinez belongs in the Hall of Fame. He is one of the best hitters I have ever seen.
Okay, so you don't have a problem with him or
no.
Ray Holiday. Roy
no,
Holiday.
Roy, no, I had no issues.
Okay.
Let's see what. So Holiday, Edgar Martinez. Rivera got 100%. Holiday got 85%. Edgar Martinez got 85%. Mussina got 76%. Any problem with Mussina?
I don't have any problem with it. That was one that took a long time to get over the hump. But if you look at Mussina's consistency year after year after year, you got to say, hey, that guy deserves to be in. Holiday was more domination for a 9 or 10 year period. Cy Young in both leagues.
He was
no hitters.
So good. Untouchable. For many, many seasons. Just untouchable.
And so he gets in first
shoot
ballot.
Up a ton of innings.
Jason Stark pointed out that rarely does a pitcher get in the first year by that big of a margin. It's been a long time. So he was a clear cut. And especially when you consider the hitters that he was facing, the era that he was pitching in.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much a hitter's era, you know, dominated by the smaller ballparks. We know all the stuff, you know, the...
Mm-hmm. Steroid era.
Or at least...
It's not too soon.
Now, his most dominating years were right after they started putting in at least some testing. So it was more of a level playing field. But still, the hitters were so strong.
Dominant.
He was awesome.
And he, by the way, would come right at you.
Yeah.
Not afraid of you at all.
And in an era where the complete game was sort of shrinking... He was still a guy that could get you 230, 240 innings. Would get you 7 or 8 complete games.
Oh, yeah. And it's every season.
Yeah, he would lead the league.
No doubt. Every year.
Now, leading the league in his era was a lot different than leading in the 80s or the 70s.
But he would have done that, though. I feel like if you had plopped him in that era, he would have had 16 complete games a season.
I do have to say, with all due respect to those guys in the 60s and 70s that still today are like, I don't know why the guys can't complete the games. I had 25 complete games every year. It's harder. It's getting harder to complete the game. It's much harder now than it was back then, with all due respect to those guys.
Well, the difference is, too,
the game has changed. The game has evolved.
Not really. You know what's really changed? What's really changed is the money. That's why.
That's not it.
When you have $25 million in a pitcher, you want to try to preserve as much as you can.
I don't think that's
back then, they didn't have the financial tied up into them where if they lost him, okay. But now you lose that guy when you're paying him $22, $25 million a year. It's crippling.
The hitters are better. The parks are smaller. There's less foul territory. There's a lot of things that make
there
it harder.
There are, but money
the
is
hitters
a big
work the count
factor.
More. The hitters work the count more. They're more patient.
We can't afford
they're
to
more
lose
refined.
It's we got to keep his arm. We got to keep his arm.
I don't think that's the reason. I do think people have not really figured out how to preserve the arm, but they throw harder. They, they throw more pitches. There's more wear and tear, I think.
Sure.
It's just not as easy to work through the lineup.
Different than what they grew up. Yeah. They weren't playing in traveling teams.
The game
weren't
is
playing
taught,
ball year round.
The game is taught better too. The
yeah,
game has
true.
The instruction you get, it's harder to work the hitters. It's a fascinating thing. But here is to me the most fascinating that Jason Stark pointed out. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds got 59% each, 59-60%.
Clemens got 59, Bonds 59, yes. Got
to get to 75. And
Schilling had 60. He was the highest that didn't get in.
So they're steadily going up. Schilling might get there. But Bonds and Clemens, as Jason points out, the writers are pretty much dug in. You have a lot of the newer writers who are less inclined to say, not letting those guys in.
Sammy Sosa, 8%.
Now, that's interesting.
8%.
Because if you're going to vote for Bonds, I haven't asked anybody this that votes, but I would like to. If you're going to vote for Bonds and Clemens, why wouldn't you vote for Sosa and McGuire? I guess the argument is Bonds and Clemens were Hall of Famers before they started juicing.
No, that's the silliest
thing I think
ever.
That's a weird one. And that's not Jason's argument.
And it's dumb.
Jason's argument is, hey, listen, we've already let people in that we think have probably done some of the same stuff, so I'm voting for all those guys. So
he didn't have to do it. Well, I don't care if he did. He did it.
But
it's such a silly argument.
But this is the last point that he makes. It's interesting. In 2012, that would be the last year that the writers have a chance to have Clemens and Bonds on the ballot. 2012. It's also the first year that A-Rod and David Ortiz, to a lesser extent, go on the ballot. So can you imagine the debate?
What year?
2012. I'm sorry, 2022.
Like, what am I missing here? Yeah. What?
2022.
Can we just go back in time?
We went back in time. I'm in a time warp. 2022.
Awesome. Did my hair get a little darker?
Or is it 21? Maybe 2021?
Yeah,
anyway, it's a couple years down the road. Whatever the first year A-Rod's on the ballot will be the last year that Bonds and Clemens are on the ballot. Can you imagine the debate then? Because now it gets more complicated. A-Rod cheated in an era where we knew what the rules were.
But he has done a much, much better job of repairing his image than the other two guys.
But he cheated during a time where there was testing.
And he is repairing his image. The other two have not.
Because some people,
Clemens and Bonds, have done nothing to repair their image.
Right.
At least A-Rod is.
They've never even admitted it.
No.
They've never even admitted it.
A-Rod is completely different. Now, you have to, as much as people love to hate on A-Rod, and I get it, he has done a really good job of trying to fix this thing.
That's a whole other thing.
He's not hiding.
But this is a whole other thing.
He's not hiding. All right, we'll come back. Predators GM David Poyle on the other side of Darren and Donning. That's next. Thank you, Trevor. Preds will finish up the month of January tonight out in the desert on the strip against the Golden Knights. 9 o'clock puck drop. I'll have a pregame for you at 8 o'clock. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, now joined by Predators GM David Poyle. David, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Good morning to you guys.
Hope you're staying dry.
Everything's good. Looking forward to this last game before the break. A lot of talk about the break in terms of the benefits of it or maybe even the possible downside of it, depending on how your team is playing. I think for us, with some of the injuries, like with Kyle Turris, Salamaki, Ronaldo, I think it gives us a good chance to get close to 100%, coming out of the break. There's no question that the 82-game schedule is a real grind. So I'm really hoping our players use this in a positive way and we get a win tonight and feel good about the break before we come back.
You've done this 82-game schedule for 35-plus years, David. Coming after tonight and then coming out of the break, it's the stretch run. There's 30 games left in the regular season? What are you looking for at that point? You hit this mile marker every year. You personally, as a GM, and you're getting a little bit closer to the deadline, what are you looking to try to see as you kick off the month of February?
Well, as you just said, for the management side of it, it coincides with the trading deadline being within, basically three weeks. It's February 25th. So we, like I imagine just about every other team has just finished their, what we call, mid-year meetings, both on the amateur side and on the pro side. We'll be having regular calls with our pro scouts as we get closer to the deadline and go over what we met about 10 days ago in our meetings, and just make sure that we are looking at all possibilities to improve our team before we get into this stretch drive. But as far as the schedule is concerned, lots of division games, lots of conference games in the last 30 games of the season. It's almost a split. I think we may have two more home games and road games. I think our travel is not too bad. So the density of the schedule is pretty high at the last part of the season. But for us, I think in comparison to other teams, I think we've got a pretty good schedule. So right now, it's like really focusing on what we need. And as I've said, almost every week when I talk to you guys, I'd really like to get 100% healthy to see what we have before we, venture off into, maybe making a trade that might take us in a different direction.
Yeah, you're getting oh so close to hopefully that happening. In fact, I guess might as well just hit on that. Do you feel confident? You got Kyle Turris. Is he getting pretty close to rejoining the team? You had Yannick Weber rejoin the team a couple of games ago. How about Kyle Turris?
Yeah, I think we're getting close. I think with Kyle, there's going to be probably a little bit of time after the break. I don't anticipate him playing in the first two games coming out of the break, but I would hope after that, from a conditioning and practice standpoint, that he'll be getting pretty close. And Sal Mackey and Ronaldo, I feel they should be close also.
Okay. You told us last week before the Winnipeg game, you wanted to really watch and observe that game and see how the two stacked up, what Winnipeg looked like. That was just the second time you'd seen them. There'll be two more meetings up in Winnipeg in the month of March. So what was your takeaway from the game on last Thursday?
Not good. I'd like to have a do-over on what I said. On that. I'd like to throw that one away. Every year there's certain games that are disappointing, and obviously there's a lot more games that are really positive for you, but that was not one of our better games all across the board. I mean, they, for whatever reason, they just seemed to have the jump on us. I mean, give up a goal late in the first period, early in the second period. I mean, just a bad night all around. So, that does not put me in a position where we got to go out and do something different. Like, everybody talks about the matchup between, Winnipeg and Nashville. I mean, it may happen. It may not happen. I mean, you don't know for sure. And again, I think, we got to take care of our own team before we just compare ourselves to just one other team in the league. There's lots of good teams in the league, and Winnipeg is one of them. I mean, I just go back to last year's that we played in a seven-game series, the seventh game at home, and I mean, that was anybody's series. I thought we should have won, could have won, and I'm not afraid to play them again next this season if that opportunity presents itself. But I think to a man, we realized that was not one of our better games. So hopefully in the next two times we play Winnipeg, our game and our results will be much different.
So did I take that answer, because that was kind of my follow-up, is that you said that didn't really influence you, even though you didn't like what you saw, it didn't really change your mind of how you felt, I guess, for the next 3 weeks or so when you have to make a tough decision on whether to trade or not?
I guess what I meant by my comments going into the game is that I was expecting us to play really well and to win the game. And then I'd be talking to you this week saying, I feel really good about our team. I think it's as simple as that. But we all know life is not perfect. The game of hockey certainly is lots of ups and downs. And I'd just like to move on from that game, and we'll get our chance with Winnipeg two more times in the regular season and maybe again in the playoffs.
Is that something you've had to learn over the years, David, is to not get too wrapped up into what happens in any one particular game? Because it was easy for all of the people that have watched these two teams go head-to-head. And if you go back and look, in the last 14 meetings, each team has won 7. But it's easy after that one game to say, oh, boy, all of the weaknesses. Look at all the great things that Winnipeg does, and Nashville's got to do something to combat that. But in the reality is these two teams have been almost even over the long haul.
Right. Yeah, and we have, and we've won in their building, and they've won in our building. So it's, I think, again, we're at the top of our division as we were last year. So it's two of the better teams, hopefully, in the whole league that are going against each other. And, you know, I think the fact that we're 7-7, as you said, in the last 14 games, pretty well says it right there that anything can happen. They came out on top in the last game. They came out on top in the playoffs. Hopefully we'll get our chance to come out on top the next time around.
Speaking with Predators GM David Poile, along those lines, it is interesting. I want to get your thoughts on this, if it's a big deal, not a big deal. You said last 14 games, each team is taken 7 of those 14. Looks very even on that. Last year they played to game 7 in the second round of the playoffs. Going back, and if you do even a little bit smaller sample, in the last 9 meetings between the two teams, David, the team to score first has always won the game 8 out of 9 times. Ironically, the only game that didn't work was game 3 in Winnipeg in the playoffs last year when Nashville jumped out to the 3-0 lead. So it looks like for whatever reason, and really this team has done this all year, when they score first, good things happen. When they don't score first, bad things happen. What do you make of that 50 games in?
Yeah, we talk about that all the time because we're so good when we get the first goal of the game. I think I'm going to look this up right now. We're 23-2-1. 23-2-1 when we score the first goal. That's only 3 losses when we score the first goal. That's pretty convincing. I'd like to think that we have, on the flip side of this, I'd like to think that we have the ability, the skill, the manpower that we can come back in a more regular basis. But it just hasn't happened as much this year. When we haven't scored the first goal, we've only won 3 games and we lost 2 in overtime. So it is a convincing stat, and it's something that I think going down the stretch here, and certainly when you get in the playoffs, you got to have some comebacks. But saying that, I mean, when we get off to good starts, and that's sort of been a little bit of a topic right now where we haven't really got off to good starts. Even in our win in Colorado the other night, we won the game in the second and third period, but Pekarinen kind of had to hold the fort for the first period because we didn't get off to a good start. And again, that's something that coaches are talking about, the players are certainly aware of, and we know the importance of that first goal. So just another thing in our game that we have to get back to being a little bit better, get those first starts. And we know, like we played against Colorado, that we can shut teams down when we need to and have to. And, after that first period, we played a real, solid game, especially with the lead. We kind of, took them out of the game with those first couple of goals.
Well, David Poile is with us, Predators GM. It's interesting what you've had to observe here, David, with these injuries. We've seen a long stretch where Ryan Johansson was playing without Forsberg and Arvidsson on his wings, and then the reverse has been true the last couple of games. You got to see what it looks like with Johansson out, Forsberg and Arvidsson in. And my question is, in talking about Kyle Turris, who's on his way back in there, it's been difficult to evaluate your second line because Kyle Turris has missed so much time here. How difficult a challenge is that when you have pieces missing, or is it a good way to find out about the individual value of each player?
It's a good way to find out for a certain amount of time, but there's no question that we're missing these guys, and guys just aren't in the right place this year. It's almost like I say, after the first 20 games, we don't have any consistency with our lines from game to game, and that's due to putting players in positions that maybe they're not familiar with, haven't had that opportunity, or maybe they're not good enough to play in those positions. So, as I said in the first question, we talked about the trading deadline. I mean, when you talk about all sorts of ideas, it's usually what I have in front of me is a depth chart, which shows that we're 100% healthy. And I hope that's the right way of doing it. And that's why it's a little bit of an uncertain, situation. I mean, all the injuries we have, as I just said, they're coming back. They're not the end of the year injuries or anything like that, but we just haven't had our team together. And you point out correctly that I think with Joey being back tonight on our first line, we're very confident that that's one of the best lines in the league. But we're not as confident in our second line, and that's because you know, Turris has been out a couple of times this year, and there's been some, you know, some inconsistencies with some of the other players. I feel confident on the third and fourth lines, whatever we put together. Nick Bonino has been playing really well, and whoever plays with him, I mean, they seem to do a good job defensively, and they're also starting to score some goals. So second line is really the biggest question mark on our team right now.
David, last thing for you. One guy that has been plugged in into so many different roles, but he's shown his value in the process, Colton Sissons, who continues each year to add layers to his game, it seems like. He's become a guy that has really become part of the core now.
Absolutely. And, you know, just if you look at how he's played year after year and the importance of our club, I mean, a lot of coaches like to refer to certain players as a fix-it type of guy that they need help on this line, and he can come in and do it. But I think, you know, right now Colton Sissons is doing as much as he can for our team. He's playing the wing, playing center, playing penalty killing, doing a little bit sometimes in the power play and the net front presence. So I really like where his game is going. I really like his compete. He's a guy that certainly we feel is going to be an important part if we're going to ever win anything in the playoffs and get a Stanley Cup. I can really envision Colton Sissons being a big part of our team.
David, always good to catch up with you. Thanks so much for doing this. Go get a win in Vegas tonight and enjoy the All-Star break.
Okay, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right, that is Preds GM David Poile. We talk to him every week on the program. Usually it's Tuesdays, but this week it had to be Wednesday. Of course, we have to work around his schedule. He's a busy man, and that's brought to you by Gary Force Acura. Every week brought to you by Gary Force Acura. We'll talk about some of the things you just heard on the other side. You're listening to Darren and Donick on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think with Joey being back tonight on our first line, we're very confident that that's one of the best lines in the league. But we're not as confident in our second line, and that's because you know, Turris has been out a couple of times this year, and there's been some, you know, some inconsistencies with some of the other players. I feel confident on the third and fourth lines, whatever we put together. Nick Bonino has been playing really well, and whoever plays with him, I mean, they seem to do a good job defensively, and they're also starting to score some goals. So second line is really the biggest question mark on our team right now.
There you go, David Poile, who just joined us, brought to you by Gary Force Acura, talking about the second line. Tonight they're in Vegas to take on the Golden Knights. Final game for this month. They'll have 8 days off in between games, and then February is going to be very, very active. A lot of home games, though, but they've got three back-to-backs in the shortest month of the year, and they play 14 games in the shortest month of the year, so they're going to play a lot of hockey in the month of February. And as you heard David Poile tell us, also a lot of divisional games, which will be key. A lot of Stars, a lot of Blues. And then they'll have, we talked about it, two games against Winnipeg up there in the month of March. So what did you make of his comment about the second line has to be better?
I think it echoes what I've been saying for a while now. If you take a look at the year that the three players who went in on paper as the second line, Kyle Turris, Kevin Fiala, Craig Smith, you take that line coming off of last year where that was the line that really was not productive in particularly the series against the Jets. That was the line everybody was wondering about. And then coming into this year, Kyle Turris has been hurt a lot. He's had two different injuries, and so he won't play. It sounded to me like David Poile was saying the first back-to-back, February 1st and 2nd, he's not likely to be ready. They're looking more at that next week, which would be around February 5th, where there's two more days off, so that would give him maybe an extra week to get ready to actually play a game. So he's missed a really high number of games now. So it's hard to evaluate Kyle Turris, but he's such a critical player. He was the missing piece last year. That's why they traded and they gave up quite a few assets to get him. He is a guy that they desperately need to be a productive player, but it's been hard to evaluate him. He's been okay when he's been in there. It's been steady. It hasn't been spectacular. But then you look at the other guys. I think Craig Smith is having a Craig Smith year.
Yes. There's nothing wrong with his year. He's well on his way to another 25 goal. I predicted 26, so hopefully 26 goal season.
And that's
exactly what Craig Smith is. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, look, the other you know, big elephant in the room is Kevin Fiala.
Well, that's
period.
And I think that
period
is,
bottom line, and everybody knows it.
Everybody knows it. And David Poile didn't pull any punches, and he didn't mention Kevin Fiala by name, but I think it's clear when you look at Kevin Fiala's game that I think they were hoping he would have another year where the mistakes get smaller and the production gets bigger.
Right. 23 goals. Okay. Take another step forward. Are we talking about pushing 30?
Right. I think everybody hoped that.
Now we know that's not going to happen.
For me, it is about the goals for him to a degree because he's got that skill. He is never going to be considered a great two-way player, I think.
You're talking about Fiala.
Fiala.
Yeah.
But
I,
he is a guy that you can put up with a certain amount of mistakes if he's lighting it up on the other side. But he has not done that. And that's the head scratcher. And so, you know, I will put when he was a young player, Alexander Radulov was exactly the same. He could change a game for you, but there were times he could change a game against you by making a mental mistake or a turnover that could cost you when he was a young player. Now
he drove Radulov, Barry Trotz and Brent Peterson crazy.
Absolutely. And I think he still drives people crazy sometimes because he'll make mistakes. He's so aggressive. I'm talking about Radulov now.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a lot of penalties at the wrong times. He's frustrated. Remember the second version of Alex Radulov when he came back from the KHL for the very brief stint, it was, in a nutshell, the same thing. He had spectacular goals that really made a difference for the team. I'm not sure they would have beaten the Red Wings that year, 2012, had he not been in the lineup. He made a couple of big plays in that series. And then he had the issues in the second series against the Coyotes. Bad turnovers on the ice, you know, big mental lapses, and then, of course, the off-ice thing that put a big damper on the whole thing, too, and then it was over. Right? So let's go back to Fiala. Fiala, I think, is still a very young player. His career could still go in a number of different ways, in my opinion. He's not finished developing. But
he's 22.
Right now, when you're in a situation, when you're trying to win the cup, you do ask yourself, do I have a second line? Even if Fiala is not on the second line, do I have anybody else that, between the three of them, can get me what I need on that second line to win the cup? I think that's what they're evaluating right now.
When I have Predators fans come up to me all the time, and Fiala is always the carrot, right? That's always
dangling. He's the guy.
You're going to make a trade? Got to trade Fiala. I get it. I understand. People are frustrated right now that this year it seems like he's gone, that he's taken a step back. He's regressed. Last year it looked like, okay, this is happening. Now he takes another step. It's going to be big. But this is what I keep saying, kind of along the lines of what you were laying out there. He's 22. Let's also not forget, as much as we love him, and he'll be back in Nashville, and we look forward to having him on the show, and hopefully I'll have him on pregame, Scott Hartnell, we love him. We're huge fans. Early on in his career, when he was a baby, and he was out there playing when he was a baby, he made a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. And he drove the coaching staff crazy. Scott Hartnell, and we love him. But he had a lot of good to his game. But he had also had stuff that drove the coaches absolutely bonkers. But I would say Scott Hartnell had a pretty good career, right?
Yep.
It all worked out.
Yep. It's still a lot of ways.
Can you imagine if he gave up on Scott Hartnell? Now, we don't know. Look, by the way, Radulov has been very successful in the NHL. He just hasn't been in the NHL very long. I mean, what if he'd have stayed here the entire time and he didn't disappear to Russia for a long time? Maybe he would have changed. It would have been – the point is the upside – is worth the headache. The things that are going to drive you crazy, the upside is worth it because while they're not a perfect player, you cannot take away what they bring to the table upside because, like you said, that upside can win you games. It could win you a playoff series. And so what I always say to them is Kevin Fiala perfect? No. Does he have a lot of room to grow? Of course he does. He's 22. Are you willing to give up on a 22-year-old? And let's just say, and I admit,
who already has a 23 goal season.
Who already has a 23 goal season. And I said, look, I will admit, I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I don't know. I'm saying, if it does happen where, you know, everybody matures differently, everybody progresses differently, everybody is different. What if the light bulb, and what if it's not this year? What if it's not even next year? But what if the light bulb and everything just happens and blossoms and poof? At 24, Kevin Fiala is a 35-goal scorer. And then, for the rest of the time, He is exactly what they drafted high in the first round. Was giving up on him worth it? For the time being? For right now? Like I said, I'll give you. What if it doesn't happen this year? Okay? Yeah. Is it worth it? And then in two seasons, you're like, oh, man, I wish they had Kevin Fiala. Oh, by the way, he's not even in his prime yet. When it all happened, he's just 24. So you have to keep that in mind. I don't know if it's going to happen. Maybe this is what he's going to be. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. It's going to be up and down. It's going to be a pogo stick. I don't know. But I'm saying, remember, he's 22. There's been a lot of young guys that have come through here and young guys around the league that drove coaches and fans crazy and probably the media crazy early on in their careers. And oh, by the way, when their body work was done, they were pretty darn good in the league and it was all worth it.
I'll give you an example of another guy that I was not there, so I don't know, but I think there was a little bit of that, fair to say, with Ryan Johansson when he was at Columbus, right?
Of course.
John Tortorella.
There's a reason they traded him. Sure.
There were question marks that then they kind of said, I don't know. And I think both teams are really happy with that trade.
And he had a monster year with them.
Right. He was very productive.
And they still said, you know what? They were willing to move on from him.
Right.
But how old was he when they moved on from him?
He was about the same age.
Right.
23, I think.
And now, they got a very good piece in return.
Yeah.
But think about if they just – it was a rental, and that rental is gone. You think they would want Johansson back? Answer, yes.
But I think Ryan Johansson is a good example of a guy that has grown up between ages 22 and 26. Is he 26 now? Is that right?
No doubt.
So he has matured, and his game has matured. His value as a teammate has matured, and he's earned the big contract. Speaking of contracts, Kevin Fiala's is up at the end of the season. He is a restricted free agent, and so he is at the end of his entry-level deal. He will become more expensive, but at the same time, this is the catch-22.
You might get him at a bargain rate.
Because he's not having a great breakout year, he could be a guy that you could get on a team that is, you know, loaded with a lot of good players. You could sneak him in for the next few years at a very decent price, which is what is the Predators roster loaded with? Contracts like that. But he is that guy, right? He is a headache sometimes because he's mercurial. It's not like he's a bad guy, right? It's nothing to do with that. It's nothing like he's going to show up for practice late or anything like that. But in his game, he's got highs and lows. It is a roller coaster ride sometimes. And he has not had a great season at this point. But he is capable of going on a run in a 15-game stretch where all of a sudden, and maybe it's not till the playoffs, where he could get hot, and he could win some games for you. He's got two overtime game-winning goals in his playoff career already.
Well, and he called one of them.
One of them he called.
He told his teammates, yeah, I'm going to go win the game, and he did.
In the last year, he had the double overtime game winner against the Jets, and then later in the series, he was a healthy scratch for a game. So that's the up and down.
We'll come back. We'll wrap up the first hour. Willie, you've got a word about Lee Company.
All right. A word about Lee Company. 567-1000 is the phone number to call. And as I've been telling you, it's a two-phased plan that they have. They have a lot of different services they can offer you. I talk about the home maintenance plan a lot that we use in our house, but at your business as well, they have a lot of great things. Security systems, they have general maintenance. They can do all the things they do for your home at your business as well. The one I like to say is if you're out there and you're the guy that, you know, has been seeing something over there and saying, I got issues. I need a maintenance crew out here. Who could I call? Call Lee Company. 615-567-1000. You don't even have to call them. You can just go online right now and punch in leecompany.com, make an online appointment, tell them what the problem is. They'll be out there with the truck, and they will be ready to help you. They've got different departments. They've got the HVAC heating and cooling systems, the plumbing crew, the electric crew. They do a great job with all those things. 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Carl Ravish coming up at 11 o'clock. He's actually going to do the Vandy game at Memorial Gym. Vanderbilt hosting Tennessee. There's news on the Commodores as well. We'll get into that in the second hour of the program. Let's go out to Bellevue. Ed wants to weigh in. Ed, what's up?
Hey, guys. You know, Kevin Fiala's talent, physical abilities are apparent. When the guy's on the ice, he's typically a little quicker, maybe a stride faster than the guys try to defend him. But he seems to put pressure on himself when he has an opportunity to make a play, to make a perfect play. And it seems like he'll have an opportunity to make a pass, take a shot, and he'll hesitate and look for something better. And by then, the guy he's beaten is caught up with him, lifted his stick, put a body on him. Yeah, he makes some mental mistakes, turns the puck over on occasion. But it seems to me like his own worst enemy is the pressure he puts on himself.
Well, there's certainly that in play. Ed, thank you for the call. And if you watch him, I mean, it is very apparent. When he's on, when he's feeling it, he's the best player on the ice.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can tell when his confidence is up and when it's not.
It's like he's a magnet, and the puck is the refrigerator, right? I mean, he just goes right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. He is a guy, like a lot of guys, especially younger guys, they feed off their confidence. And he's already a confident kid to begin with. But this game also can humble you quickly. These are the best in the world. And whenever you're going through a stretch and you're not a seasoned vet, you know, guys that have been through the ringer and done, been there, done this, and they know you have highs and lows and ebbs and flows, and they know how to get out of that. They know how to dig out. Some of the younger guys don't. And when they lose their confidence, it takes them longer to dig out. Look, Craig Smith is a guy that goes on confidence. He's a confident guy too, but he has lost confidence over the years, and it's affected his play. Now, he's, once again, he's been through so many games and seasons now, Craig Smith has learned how to dig out of those stretches, those bad patches, right? Where Kevin, because Craig Smith is much more seasoned than Kevin Fiala. Fiala's just going through what a lot of players go through. Not everybody can be Connor McDavid at 19. Right, not everybody can be Austin Matthews
guys mature
at 18 and 19 and 20 years old. Not everybody is like that. Everybody takes a different path. And yes, to Ed's point, he feeds a ton on his confidence. And when he has confidence, and look, everybody behind the scenes is trying to figure out how to get him back to that, including Kevin Fiala, right? Because they know what he's capable of when he's feeling it, when he's on. But right now, it's just not happening. I'm just saying, I get it. I understand why everybody's saying, you know, I would trade Kevin. I get it. Because you're going to have to trade something to get something big in return. But I ask you, not knowing how it's going to play out, because I don't. But I ask you, are you willing to give up? Because that's what you're doing. Giving up on a talent that may not happen this year. But what if it happens next year? What if he has 32 goals next year? Or 37 goals 2 years from now, and then that's what he looks like for the next 5 years after that. Were you willing? And I know what people will say, well, yeah, if it brings a cup, if that player they trade for, I get it. Okay, we all can agree. Everybody's chasing the same thing here. We get it. The cup is the ultimate. But, you know, chasing that and making that trade doesn't guarantee you anything. And so what if it doesn't happen? So you've given away that piece. You got that player. And it didn't happen, and then 2 years from now, or even next year, Kevin Fiala is the stud that they thought they drafted high in the first round. Was it worth it? I'd say most will say probably not.
Because the equation, part of the equation is the contract, right? When you're looking at your salary cap in the quest for winning the cup. But I think this is what's interesting to me. We mentioned Radulov, Scott Hartnell, a couple of good examples of guys who matured over time. Right? The difference is back then when Radulov was 22 or 23, the team really didn't have a choice. They didn't have a stacked roster. This is, of course, after they had to go through the ownership change, right? I'm talking about that. When Radulov was really young, he was on a team that, you know, could use him as sort of a guy down in the lineup a little bit. When they had Peter Forsberg and Paul Kariya and Jason Arnott and J.P. Dumont and Steve Sullivan and an older Scott Hartnell, right? That was a really deep team. But when they had to trade off a lot of those guys and Radulov became a higher guy that you were counting on more, they had to ride the ups and downs because the rest of the lineup didn't have enough firepower. This lineup is a little bit different because you are in a window where you really feel like you can win the cup. And you do have to think about this year and next year a little bit more so. And so is there a deal out there? If you were to think about trading Fiala, It's got to be for somebody that immediately makes that second line more, a lot more dangerous with a surefire guy that is an upgrade.
Oh, by the way, we still don't know if things change in the next 30 games. Who knows?
Well, there's no question. Fiala could have his best 30 games.
Right, we're acting like it's just like this season, just throw this one away. Well, you don't know.
If he gets
what we've just been talking about, if the confidence comes back and all of a sudden he goes nuts, the next thing you know, he's ripped off 7 goals in 8 games, and he's sitting there with, what, 15, 16, 17 goals on the season, and then everything looks different, and then he gets 21 on the year. Okay? For a year that was filled with more disappointment, and he ends up with 20 or more goals, isn't that still worth it? And, oh, by the way, we can't just dismiss that he can't help you in the playoffs. I'm just saying, is it a risk? Of course. Everything is a gamble. Everything is a risk. Nobody knows how it's all going to play out. If we all knew, I mean, geez, if we all had that book and Back to the Future, we'd give it to David Poyle, let him make the appropriate moves, and we'll talk about a parade in the middle of June. I mean, duh, we get that. But without knowing, is it worth it? And for me, it's a gamble. Could it pay off? Sure. I say no because I still think he is a really, really talented hockey player. And could the light bulb could turn on? Does he need to grow up some more? Yes. Has he grown up already? Yes. Does he have more room to grow? Absolutely yes. I'm not willing to throw him out with the bathwater like a lot of people.
Not unless I get a clear upgrade of a person that is more advanced, maturity-wise, and more of a surefire guy. Then I got to think about it, even if it's just for the short term. But in the long term, I agree with you. I don't think we've seen the best for Kevin Fiala. I'll even say this. Look at his shooting percentage. That's one thing a lot of analytics people like to look at. He's 7.8%. Now, if you really want to get psychological about it, I think the caller hit on something. You know, maybe in the moment where you've got the window, maybe you think about it too much and you hit the post, or you don't quite put it in the spot where you want to put it, and it's mental. But there are some times where you are just a little unlucky. Maybe the goalie that night is a great save. Some people just think that shooting percentage is a good indicator. If he's that low and he's that good of a shooter, 7.8%, that the law of averages says that he is due to turn around and start having the puck go in for him. So that's just something to keep in mind.
We'll kick off the second hour with Carl Ravish. He'll be behind the mic over at Memorial Gym, Vanderbilt in Tennessee tonight, 6 o'clock tip-off. We'll talk to him next on 102.5 The Game.